So how are we feeling? We've
had two surgeries today, and there's still another one to go.
You're up to it? Okay, so before Dr. Krishnachandra begins our third surgery, let's take a look at the problem that he'll be removing. And this is 16b. The snake that attempted to swallow Nanda Maharaj represents impersonalistic Mayavada philosophy and other such philosophies that try to swallow up the real nature of bhakti. Thus, the association of adherence to Mayavada philosophy must be avoided. As the Vaishnava's happiness continually increases in the process of worship, they sometimes lose consciousness. At that time, the feeling of merging overcomes them. This feeling of merging with the Lord is the snake that swallowed Nanda Maharaj. A practitioner who remains free from this snake will become a qualified Vaishnava. So this, in inverted commas, this is from Krishna Samhita. This kind of feeling of merging will only be there if our preoccupation is nectar, if our preoccupation is bliss, if we have proper seva bhava, if we have a proper mood of service, this won't happen. And we see this in the residents of Braj, and even in Dwarka, even in Gaur Lila, where devotees are cursing their ecstasies because it's interfering with their service to Krishna. And Patraka is fanning Krishna, and he's feeling ecstasy from doing that service, but he's not wanting it to manifest because it will interfere with his service. So this is not going to be a problem, because Prabhupada has just given us such culture that everything, he didn't translate bhakti, devotion. He translated bhakti, devotion, service. So it's very much a part of our culture. So we're not going to have a trouble with this. And even the way he explains the Maha Mantra, we're calling for engagement and service. So it's not going to be a problem. I wanted to start this by having a look at what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, because he has such a brilliance and very clearly indicating the nature of things. I want to start with reading My Foolish Impersonalism. This Kalyana Kalpataru is an amazing, amazing book of bhajans by Bhaktivinoda. And here is directly addressing the issue, this foolishness of impersonalistic philosophy. O brothers, why does my rascal mind desire to merge into the Brahman effulgence? How astonishing it is! And to whom shall I admit it? My dear mind, please tell me, why do you want to merge yourself with that supreme Brahman, considering it to be the most worshipable thing? A drop of water certainly has the qualities of the ocean, but is obviously not the ocean itself in quantity. A small dwarf cannot possibly touch the moon, despite his best intentions, and a handful of dust can never assume that it has become a mountain. Alas, alas, such a pitiful position is foolishly upheld by those who advocate the philosophy of merging into the Lord's bodily effulgence. The only profit from such doctrines is that it will make one become offensive towards the Lord, which will hinder one from attaining the supreme objective of devotion. Renouncing this mischievous mentality of trying to artificially merge, my dear mind, just purify your existence and start searching for the process of getting real love for Krishna. If you would just try to understand the statements of the revealed scriptures, you will find that all conceptions like Sayojya, oneness with the Lord, and Nirvana, the highest blissful absorption, are actually different features which are automatically achieved by devotion, for these benefits accompany the process of service to the Lord. Statements like Tattvamasi, you belong to Krishna, are fully permeated with real tangible love for Krishna, and meditating on such Vedic statements helps the aspiring devotee to ultimately attain the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Then one will gain residence in Krishna's transcendental abode of Vrindavan, which is completely pervaded with supreme, undivided bliss. Thus one will come to know the original personal form of Parabrahma, who is situated far beyond the impersonal Brahman effulgence. The network of transcendental rays emanating from his body forms a splendorous light known as the Brahman effulgence, which is powerful enough to amaze the entire collection of mature universes. If any of the conditioned souls desire to become content by merging into that glowing light, then that will be just like being satisfied at night with the glow of lightning bugs in the absence of the sun. The insignificant light emitted by such insects will certainly never serve as a replacement for the radiant sun. And similarly, the devotee of Krishna is never content to merge with the Brahman effulgence, which is very feeble in comparison to the Lord's original form of bliss. If ever there is dawning of one's good fortune, then one will see Vrindavan shining beckoningly before his very eyes due to taking complete shelter of the virtuous devotees and spiritual masters. Then, becoming irresistibly attracted by Krishna, one runs and chases after him, the Parabrahman. Thus he simply leaves aside the insignificant realization of merging with the Brahman effulgence, for he completely is overwhelmed by the slightest contact with Krishna's transcendental mellows. Discuss and deliberate on this, my friends, and make your life successful, just like the great sages such as Sukadeva, Narada, Vyasa, and others, who all gave up Brahman realization by becoming attracted to Krishna, and then the servant Bhaktivinoda will hold your feet. Let's have a look at the other side. We'll just read the first one. The other one you can read in your own time. My dear mind, why do you have all these skeptical doubts? You despise the material world just to justify your merging into the Brahman. But you are afraid to worship Hari, the Lord of ecstatic love, for fear of perceiving your own eternal spiritual form. This fear is due to you thinking that everything is made of Brahman. You imagine that if you were to meditate on your eternal spiritual form, then sometime later you may become confused by forms, thinking them to be made of the material energy. Therefore, you are convinced that the Absolute is without any form, spotlessly pure, all-pervading, eternal, and devoid of tangibility. And now, swayed under the influence of this non-ecstatic philosophy, your blissful spiritual nature has not entered your heart. Therefore, your so-called impersonal Brahman realization has actually shortchanged you from your true ecstasy, and thus you remain simply in want of true love. Renouncing this logical juggling, just take shelter of the beautiful moonlight Krishna Chandra, who is the ecstatic manifestation of supreme bliss. In comparison to the impersonal Brahman, Lord Krishna's original personal form is composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He is the reservoir of pleasure and sweetness for all living entities. He is a complete form of beauty at all places and all times. These are some of his special wonderful characteristics. None of these wonderful qualities can be found in the impersonal Brahman. Therefore, I now declare that the Brahman effulgence is actually the transcendental effulgence of Lord Krishna's body. It is his extremely vast and extensive aura. He who is the Brahman, and above that the Parabrahman, is the original form of Lord Krishna, for whom Bhaktivinoda has love and affection. It's so beautiful. He has a way of, because of his personal relationship and realization, he's able to speak in such a sweet and simple way. And it's powerful. It actually hits home. So any questions on this?
Why is it this impersonal form so attractive to the world, to most of the people?
There are two reasons. One is fear of relationship. Like, it means that you don't have to get involved. And the other thing is that to develop a relationship with someone who's senior to you means you have to give up your controllership. You have to give up independent desire, like that. So it's a very convenient way of appearing to be spiritual without being so. There's no question of surrender. You're in control. You get the point. So it's very convenient for people to have this as their so-called religion, you know, that I'm an impersonal, this and that. Because it's... you know, it requires a lot of qualities that are not so popular these days to surrender to Krishna. Top of those is humility. It's not a common quality these days. You know, people are very aggressive, are very self-assertive. Anyone who is humble, they usually get trampled. It's just the way it works in Kali Yuga. So, you know, like, it's not a, you know, surrender to Krishna is not a pleasant or acceptable, you know, alternative for most people. It's far safer if they can, you know, appear to be having some spiritual inclination, but it doesn't challenge their values, their mindset. Things go on. Like that. We have to be careful of that. We can get involved in that kind of mentality even as devotees. That we tend to take things superficially, externally we're going through all the motions, but there's no preoccupation or even interest in the essence of the thing, which is surrender to Krishna. Take full shelter of Krishna. And then what's the value of what we're doing? So we can, you know, it has some impact on our situation also. Do we think like that? How consciously are we attempting to surrender to Krishna and Guru? We tend to avoid that kind of topic. Get caught up in philosophy, so many things. But the essence, the heart of the thing is, that's, you know, everything else is kaitava, but surrender to Krishna. So we always have to be aware that, you know, we so often point the finger outwards. But it's always good to have a look at our own circumstance and just see what we're talking about, how much of it applies to us, how much we have to, you know, make adjustments in our way of dealing with things, thinking about things. Like that. Is that okay? Anything else?
Just thinking about it. Sometimes when you're like suffering, especially,
uh-huh.
and you have this desire that, oh Lord, let the suffering end.
Uh-huh.
So it is also like an impersonalistic desire.
Liberation.
Yeah.
It's a desire for liberation. It's a very, you know, this, what we're actually involved in is a very subtle culture, and it takes a while to figure out what's what, you know. But we actually learn quickest by associating with very, very advanced devotees. By their association, we see, like with Yogi Maharaj, you know, he doesn't have any idea of something being happy or distressful, good or bad. You know, it's just constant service. He's just constantly absorbed in how he can serve Prabhupada. So this is a clear indication that he's not preoccupied with liberation, he's not preoccupied with sense gratification. His preoccupation is Prabhupada and his mission, his service to his mission. Very high platform of realization. Because even in devotional service, we tend to be sense gratifiers. We want to satisfy our senses. So, you know, something to look at. Anything else? Okay, so we'll begin our third surgery for today. Anybody have anything to say about the presentation Prabhupada gives in Krishna Bhav?
It's very short, nothing much, but one point that I was thinking that Prabhupada, even from like the whole Leela,
mm-hmm.
you can see how pride, which develops from, you know, a good position, good looks,
mm-hmm.
good education, how it is so detrimental that, you know, even from such a good position, you can fall down and become a snake.
Yeah, Prabhupada says that very strongly. That's also what I picked up, because he says here, one should note here that before being favored by Krishna, a person is always under the modes of material nature, however elevated he may be materially. Vijayadhara was a materially elevated demigod, and he was very beautiful. He also held a great material position and was able to travel all over by airplane. yet he was condemned to become a serpent in his next life. Any materially elevated person can be condemned to be to an abominable species of life if he's not careful. It is a misconception that after reaching the human body, one is never degraded. Vijayadhara himself stated that even though he was a demigod, he was condemned to become a serpent. But because he was touched by the lotus feet of Krishna, he immediately came to Krishna consciousness. He admitted, however, that in his previous life he was actually sinful. A Krishna conscious person knows that he is always a servant of the servant of Krishna. He is most insignificant, and whatever good he does is by the grace of Krishna, the spiritual master. So that's the safe position, to see that, basically we don't have anything of worth except mercy. We're a product of the mercy of, Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas. If you look at ourselves before we came to the movement, was there anything really of worth there, We've been transformed so much by the mercy of Prabhupada and his process, so it doesn't pay to to forget that. Any other questions or comments? Okay. I wanted to share something with you from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this. He doesn't say a lot, but it's interesting what he does say. He tells us that the snake that swallowed him was a boa constrictor. These are heavy boa constrictors. They're heavy-duty snakes. They're huge, and they can swallow whole forms. It's very difficult to, once the snake has started to eat something, to get it out is quite an endeavor. So it's interesting that he makes that comment, that this was the nastiness of this particular snake. He also mentions that the reason that Nanda Maharaj called out to Krishna was because he remembered Garga Muni's words. That Krishna would save the inhabitants of Braj from all dangers. So, he's a simple Braj bhakta, and he's just thinking, well, the sages said this. They have simple faith in that. So, he's the one I call out to.
So many instances in the past, even then, they just don't realize.
It's such a, something super sweet about the way they deal with things. Not much that he said as comment, but just a little bit. So, no questions, no comments?